I say it's time we stop talking about it and time to do it. Oh, I mean a revolution, a Jesus revolution.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I hope you had a good Thanksgiving break. I had blessed time with family, got some rest time, got some time to seek the Lord, got some time to write, and my heart has been ready for today for several days because I burn to see Jesus' revolution in our society. I burn to see such radical changes take place among us, among you and I, who know the Lord and are following Him. Such radical changes that take place in us that it creates a holy upheaval in the society, an upheaval of life, an upheaval of truth, life transformation through the gospel. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us on this Monday here on The Line of Fire. Here's the number to call, 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Click on The Line of Fire. I've got some insights I want to share with you about recent news, some things that happened in the Middle East, some things happening in America, some other things of interest I'll share with you. But I just want to put something out for all of us to consider, all right? We live in a free society. Yeah, I know there are some restrictions on our freedoms in certain ways and may not be as free today as it was a few years back, but basically it's still a free society. I can still get on the radio and talk freely about all the issues that are on my heart. You can get up and preach in a church if you're a pastor and preach freely without worrying about, say, the KGB and the former Soviet Union coming to arrest you in the middle of your message, or some Muslim radical coming into the building to blow himself up and kill people along with you. We can basically get up and preach and minister freely. If you want to follow Jesus in your private life, if you want to take out a Bible at lunchtime and read at your place of business or in your school, you can basically do it. Oh, you'll have some weird thing happen where, oh, you can't have a Bible, but that's going to get shot down in any court, obviously. My point is we can do what we want to do for God. If you want to pray, you can pray. If you want to fast, you can fast. I don't mean that we have endless time, and I understand some of you may have physical issues and you can't fast. I'm talking about for the vast majority of us. If we want to go after God, we can go after God. If we want to press into Him privately, we can do it. If we want to live holy and moral lives with God's help and grace, we can do it. What's stopping us from really going for it? What's stopping us from really living revolutionary lives? Why is it that so often, rather than us changing the world changes us? Why is it so often that we just find it easier to swim along with the tide and somehow think that by swimming with the tide and sharing our wonderful ideas along the way that will bring about change? Friends, it's not going to happen like that. Change is going to come in our society for life, for marriage, for truth. Change is going to come in the educational system. Change is going to come in the business realm. Change is going to come in 100 different areas of society when we don't just swim along with the tide and do what the rest of the world does, but lead counterculture lives based on the teachings of Jesus, based on the fact that this world is not our eternal home, based on the fact that we have a mission and a commission, the Great Commission, to be disciples and make disciples. When we swim against the tide and go against the grain with love and with humility and stand up for what's right, that's when culture is going to change. The world's not going to change by us just blending in and showing that we're nice. And yeah, you sin, I sin. You mess up, I mess up. You don't know where you're going, I don't know where I'm going. Friends, that's not going to win the world or change the world. We've got to regain our way in God and then live that out. We come back, I want to play a shocking audio clip for you if you haven't heard it yet. Prepare to have your heart stirred today on The Line of Fire.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to encourage you not to be an excuse maker, not to be a fault finder, not to be a finger pointer, but to be an overcomer. If you did not get to hear the show from Friday about grumbling and complaining, it's a really important teaching I did. We didn't take any calls, devoted the whole show to it. Listen when you get a chance. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. 866-348-7884. All right, this is all over the news now. This is Jamie Foxx at the beginning of the Soul Train Awards on BET TV. This was just last night. This is how he opens things up.
First of all, give an honor to God and our Lord and Savior, Barack Obama. Barack Obama. Y'all stand up right now. You got to.
All right, I'm not blaming the president for the insanity of what Jamie Foxx did, nor am I making any statement based on the context in which it was done. But that type of complete idiocy, exalting any person to the point that Jesus alone occupies, is in an overt form what we do in many, many other ways. Jamie Foxx did is blasphemous and idiotic, and the fact that there was not a chorus of boos to greet his idiotic statement is also deplorable. The fact of the matter is that we put our trust in earthly things, that we put our trust in earthly powers so much more than we often put our trust in God. Look, if we were in financial straits, we might put our trust more in what the bank could do for us than what God can do for us. If we're in a life-threatening situation health-wise, we may put more trust in what a doctor can do for us than what God can do for us. The fact is, we are often flesh-dependent. And that ridiculous, idiotic statement that I just played for you from Jamie Foxx is just a reminder of to what extremes people can take that. What if we determined, I'm not going to point fingers at what's wrong with this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. Instead, I'm going to go about bringing an answer. What if we said, I know the world is messed up, but I expect the world to be messed up. I will expose the darkness of the world through the light of the gospel, but I'm going to put the onus of the burden on me to bring about positive change. Friends, if we did that, if we really took seriously the idea that there needs to be a Jesus revolution in society, if we really took seriously the idea that we need to be God's agents of change, if we really took seriously the idea that, say, the reason abortion on demand exists in our town or community is because of the apathy of the church, and we started to go to the Lord and we started to get involved and we started to make a difference, friends, we would be shocked with what would actually happen. When our kids were little, our daughters are now 35 and about to be 34, and our youngest grandchild is 6, so I'm talking even years when they were younger than 6, so we're going back a good ways in my history here, 30-plus years. There was one of the first reading books I remember reading with our girls, probably with our older daughter. And, you know, she'd memorize the book, even if she couldn't read all the words, she would memorize it as we would go through it. It looked like she was reading better than she was, but she actually just memorized it. There was one book, and it's still available. I went online just to check out of curiosity. I'll teach my dog 100 words. And here's a guy, and he's sitting under the tree with his dog, and he gets this brainstorm. He's going to start teaching his dog words. And this dog is going to learn to sit and to stand and to jump and to do this and to do that. And of course, it's introducing all this vocabulary, illustrated to the kids. And he's teaching the dog all these amazing tricks and words, and it's 100 words. And then you get to the last page, and he's under the tree sleeping, and his dog's under the tree sleeping. He's basically dreaming about it. And he says, I'll teach my dog 100 words tomorrow. Oh, tomorrow we're going to make an impact. Oh, tomorrow we're going to do great things for God. Oh, tomorrow we're really going to pray. Oh, tomorrow we're really going to get in the Word. Oh, tomorrow we're going to change our lifestyle. Oh, tomorrow we're going to evangelize our neighbors. That's how some of us have lived for decades. 2013. What's it going to be? What was it? More of heaven in 2007 is probably more of heaven in 1907. I mean, we've got the little cliches. What's going to be the cliche for 2013? What's going to be the motto? How many new resolutions are going to be made New Year's Eve, the end of this year, end of 2012, coming into 2013, that'll be broken or forgotten within hours? What we need to do is today look in the mirror and today say, God, here I am, send me, use me, make me fully usable. What we need to do is today not make excuses. I saw part of a football game yesterday. I was doing some writing and watching a game, preached in the morning and then took a nap, and then later in the afternoon watching some football and writing some things out. And I had noticed that it was a Pittsburgh Steelers game. Their lead quarterback had been injured. Their backup quarterback had been injured. The team kind of fell apart during the game. And they said that the head coach, Mike Tomlin, his philosophy is no excuses, no explanations. You know, what happened with this? What happened with that? You know, you're missing your quarterback, one of the best in the league. No excuses, no explanations. We just got to go out and perform. And I thought, yeah, that's the way he is, kind of stoic, just solid, leading the way on the sidelines there, tough guy himself, obviously apt to be a football coach. What if we live like that? No excuses, no explanations. We're just going to do it. We're going to do what God's called us to do. We're going to be obedient to him. We're going to walk in the light that we have. Yeah, but Mike, I don't have major opportunities. I mean, here you are on the radio, and you can talk to all these people on the radio, and you can write these articles, and they're posted on websites or publish these books, and I don't have this opportunity. First thing, the issue is not opportunity. The issue is service. The issue is availability. The issue is obedience. That's the first thing. The second thing is faithful with little, faithful with much. This is one of the principles that Jesus laid out in Luke 16. If we're faithful with little, then we'll also be faithful with much. Oh, man, if I could preach to crowds like Billy Graham used to, man, I would prepare the best messages, but my church is only 30 people. Well, tell you what, preach to those 30 as if they were 30,000 or 30 million. Preach to those 30 as if Jesus himself was sitting there saying, hey, I've entrusted these 30 to you that I died for. And you may just end up preaching to 30,000. Or it could be by being faithful with those 30 that those 30 go out and become world changers and one of them ends up being a president of the United States. Who knows? Let's not measure the way the world measures. If we're faithful in little, we'll also be faithful in much. Listen to what Jesus says. If we're faithful with earthly riches, then he'll entrust us with spiritual riches. If we're faithful with the way we handle our finances, if we are generous, if we are honest, if we are frugal, if we are wise with our earthly finances, then Jesus will entrust us with spiritual riches. And then he says, if we're faithful in that which belongs to someone else, then he'll make us, then we'll be faithful and he'll entrust us with that which is our own. Get the concept there. Do you understand the concept that here, you lend me your car? What's your car? I don't take care of it. I'll give it back filthy, dirty, needing an oil change. You know, I clean the inside and it's got a little nick on the side. What's the matter? It's not mine. Then I can't be trusted with that which belongs to me. But if I'm faithful with your vehicle and I get it back to you in better shape than when you gave it to me, and I'm conscientious with it, then I'm proving I can be trusted with something that belongs to me. Sometimes what we do, it seems insignificant, or it's just dealing with earthly things, or it's someone else's ministry. Hey, you serve in that faithfully, and you serve with that little and with those earthly things faithfully, and God will entrust you with things of your own. And friends, I'm blessed, I'm thrilled to have this opportunity to talk to you on the radio. I'm thrilled to have the open door that God has set before me. I believe if I'm faithful in this, that God will continue to open greater doors, because it's not about me and it's not about you. It's a matter of getting the job done. Come on, let's look in the mirror. And look in the mirror when you have an opportunity and just ask yourself this question. What's stopping you? What's stopping you? What's stopping you from really stepping out and doing the will of God? Some perspectives on the Middle East, an important announcement also when we come back. Stay with us.
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us after the Thanksgiving break. Folks, back to normal life. Hope you did have a good few days with family and or friends. 866-348-7884. Just putting forth a loving challenge today to those of us who claim to be followers of Jesus, disciples. What's stopping us? What's holding us back from really doing what God's called us to do? No one can stop us from sharing our faith. No one can stop us from praying. No one can stop us from living for God. No one can stop us from standing for what's right. What is it that holds us back? 866-34-TRUTH. Let me give you some perspectives on the ceasefire and the war in Gaza. There was tremendous pressure on Israel to enter into a ceasefire that was brokered by Mohamed Morsi, the leader of Egypt, the leader of the Muslim Brotherhood. And right now, in case you haven't been following the news, there is massive upheaval again in Egypt as Morsi assumed ridiculous powers, unaccountable powers, riots afresh in Egypt. That situation remains very, very volatile. But the Egypt, for various reasons, needed to come out as a balanced broker in the midst of this. One argument is that they're looking, expecting large amounts of international aid and aid from America as well, and therefore needed to posture themselves not as the friend of Hamas and the enemy of Israel, but as the peace-loving people. Obviously, the solidarity is going to be with Hamas, a terrorist organization that leads Gaza. But Israel was poised to go in with an extended ground invasion as the only way to effectively dismantle Hamas from the inside, dismantle their multifaceted arm of terror and murder. And Israel did not go in. Now, on the one hand, it's positive. If there can be a reduction in bloodshed, it's positive. Certainly, no one in Israel relished the thought of family members and relatives going into Gaza to fight. And contrary to the reports that you constantly hear, Israel takes extreme measures to preserve to reduce civilian casualties and preserve the lives of those who are not terrorists and those who are not military. You have to ask the question. With all of the money that's spent on weaponry by Hamas and Islamic terrorists, how come there isn't money spent on bunkers, bomb bunkers? Why aren't those all over Gaza? So if there is a counterattack from Israel, if Israel goes to take out Hamas's terror capabilities, why aren't there bunkers built? Why not? Why not protect the people? Because protecting the people is not the great goal. The great goal is destroying Israel. And for the Israelis going in, they put their own lives at risk because of their policies extreme policies to protect innocent civilians. Yes, there are casualties, but those are unintended casualties. It's the opposite with Hamas. The intended casualties of Hamas are anybody in Israel, men, women, children, civilian, military, doesn't matter. Israel's the enemy. Well, because the Israelis stopped short their offensive, it seems the majority of Israelis are actually against that, against what Prime Minister Netanyahu did. They needed to see a strong hand in rooting out terror. Now that with the help of Iran, and there are reports that Iran is now already working to rearm Hamas, that with the help of Iran, that their missile range is now greater and they're able to attack Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. So you've got sirens going off in some of the key cities, the two largest influential cities in the country. Sirens going off, people having to run for their lives on an ongoing basis. The fact that the Israeli defense system, Iron Dome, intercepted so many weapons and rockets and bombs is wonderful, but Israel's even been criticized. Well, why then go and attack back then if your defense system is so good? I wrote an article Thursday night. Everyone had left, family, and Nancy and I stayed up to about 2:30 cleaning the house. We had about 30 guests with us, including 15 kids. 2:30 in the morning, I just felt prompted. I wrote an article, finished at 3:30, sent it off, and it went out on Town Hall Friday morning, Saturday, and then charismanews.com. You can read it now, charismanews.com. Click on opinion. It's called Not Enough Dead Jews. And basically, it seems that the greatest failing that Israel had in the midst of this conflict was it didn't suffer enough casualties to satisfy its critics. That, you know, Israeli aggression against the unarmed Palestinians, look at what they did. How many did they kill? 100+, and only 3 or 4 or 5 dead Jews. Not enough dead Jews, you see. See, they're doing something. They're Israel. They're the terrorists, because in their self-defense, they take out Hamas terrorists who are often planted right in the midst of neighborhoods so as to make it impossible or difficult for Israel to retaliate against them without killing civilians. See, there just weren't enough Israelis killed. Read the article. Not enough dead Jews. Some shocking quotes. In fact, I'll share in the next hour and a half some more of this with you. Hey, friends, I want to heart-to-heart ask you to stand with me. Next week, God willing, I leave for India, my 20th trip. I'll be pouring into church planters there that go into dangerous regions to preach the gospel. Men who live with their entire families for $40 or $50 a month. And we'll be presiding again another graduation of the next generation of church planters that are going to be sent out. Some of them have been beaten, some even killed. The following month, I go to China for the first time, ministering in Hong Kong to Chinese church pastors, underground pastors, others who've been persecuted for their faith, teaching the book of Jeremiah. These are trips that in many ways we have to underwrite either in whole or in part. We'll be broadcasting live, God willing, from these different countries as well. I want to ask you to help send me to India and China. I'm asking you personally to hold my hands up and send me on this journey and help back us as we go. And as always, we want to say thank you for doing it. For your gift of $50, we'll send you 4 of the best debates I've ever done. A classic one with Rabbi Shmuley. My debate with gay activist Harry Knox, my debate with agnostic New Testament professor Bart Ehrman on the problem of suffering, and my debate where Dr. James White and I team up together to debate on the deity of Jesus. $75 value for those debates. We'll send them to you as our thank you gift for your gift to us of $50 to help send me to China and India. If you can help with a $100 gift, we'll also add in my commentary on Jeremiah, 550 pages, plus commentaries on Ezekiel and Daniel that come in that volume as well by other scholars, and 2 hours of lectures I did on the book of Jeremiah that are not available to the general public on DVD for your gift of $100. So call right now, help send me to India and China. Would you do that? 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. 278-9978, or you can do it online. Go to my online bookstore, askdrbrown.org, and click on the online bookstore.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me just spend a few more moments talking to you about this article I wrote, Not Enough Dead Jews. As I say in the article, once again, the world is railing against Israeli aggression and casting its sympathies with those who seek to slaughter its civilians, and this despite the outrageous statements of the Islamic radicals hell-bent on destroying Israel. Past Thursday, Thanksgiving, Hamas leader Ismail Haniyeh said, "Israel screamed with pain from what the resistance did to it. I thank everyone who provided us with arms and money, especially Iran." So this is something positive to make Israel, quote, scream with pain. And bear in mind that Hamas is celebrating this as a victory. They bombed every way they knew how. They realized they could now reach Tel Aviv and Jerusalem with their missiles. And they're celebrating over this. And when there was a terrorist bomb put on a bus in Israel, they celebrated this, 22 Israelis wounded. So Hamas-run Al-Aqsa TV aired a report showing footage of the bloody scene, commenting, quote, "These are the scenes of the casualties. God willing, we will soon see black body bags. I pray to God, the Exalted, we will see body bags in a short while. Right now in these moments, the mosques in the Gaza Strip, their minarets are loudly sounding cries of Allahu Akbar and cries of joy. And the residents of the Gaza Strip are bowing down to Allah for this offering or this gift. The morale of the Gaza residents is in the sky right now and is rising just as the rockets of the resistance." So this is cause for celebration. Cause for celebration in Gaza. Article 6 and 8 of the Hamas Charter read in part, "Israel will rise and remain erect until Islam eliminates it. The Islamic resistance movement strives to raise the banner of Allah over every inch of Palestine. Allah is our goal, the Prophet our model, the Quran our constitution, jihad our path, and death for the cause of Allah our most sublime belief." Israel's deputy foreign minister, Danny Ayalon, noted that, quote, "Hamas's charter includes the aspiration that the day of judgment will not come about until Muslims fight the Jews, killing the Jews." In contrast, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu pointed out that for us, every time there are civilian casualties, that's an operational failure. For them, every time there are civilian casualties, that's an operational success. So Israel goes in with its advanced weaponry, is as careful as possible to not inflict civilian casualties. Do they happen sometimes? Yes. Are people grieved over it in Israel over it? Yes. Do they do what they can to learn from it and to further prevent civilian casualties? Absolutely. I've talked to people who were involved in Operation Cast Lead the last time that there was an escalating conflict with Hamas in Gaza, and Israel actually had to launch a ground invasion, as it almost did this time around. And in point of fact, friends, when talking to the soldiers that were in there, they're talking about the extreme care that had to be exercised because of the rules about not killing or hurting civilians. Israel will call the homes of people and say, "Get out. Get out. Your home is being used for rocket launching, or bombs are being stored there. We're going to bomb it. Get out of your house before we do." Leaflets will be passed out saying, "You need to leave this area because we're bombing it." And yet, of course, there will be more Palestinians or terrorists, primarily terrorists, who are killed than Israelis killed. Then Israel's the real terrorist organization. One of my colleagues pointed out in his newsletter that when NATO was bombing Libya in the uprising against Gaddafi, there were something like 4,500 casualties, but no NATO casualties. Does that make NATO into a terrorist organization? We'll be be back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
866-348-7884. I asked a question last week, a candid question, put it out for discussion, and was very pleased with the comments. I was not surprised. I expected to get these kinds of comments. Nonetheless, I was really pleased to get them. I asked this question. I've decided prayerfully to put really difficult issues on the table here on the Line of Fire. I have decided prayerfully to address issues that often divide race, religion, politics, and to say, look, we all have blind spots. Let's talk these things through together. Now, the problem is when you do that, you can make the matter worse. You can, through insensitivity or lack of wisdom, make the matter worse than you started easily. You can inflame tensions. You can exacerbate differences. You can be ignorant rather than exposing ignorance. So you need to approach these things with wisdom and with sensitivity. And obviously, that's been my heart as one part of the body, not the whole body, but one part of the body, and one part that honors the rest of the body, saying, let's talk these things through. Why is it that white evangelicals seem to be so devoted to the Republican Party? Why is it black evangelicals seem to be so devoted to the Democratic Party? Where are we missing each other? So I asked the question, is it worth it? Maybe you wanted to call in and comment on this, didn't get a chance. I may even take a couple of calls, 866-34-TRUTH. I asked the question, is it worth it or are we just provoking things more? Is it worth it? Is it helpful? Is it productive? And we got flooded with phone calls, and every single caller, without exception, that weighed in said, I'm glad you're doing this. We need to have these discussions. Callers from different backgrounds, racially and politically, but fellow believers, said, we need to have these discussions. It's important. Now, I posted two articles as follow-up articles on different websites to my open letter to my black evangelical friends. Because it was posted on a political website and then on a Christian website, I got different levels of response. And so I posted some of those responses online, one on charismanews.com, one on townhall.com. In fact, just put it up this morning, some revealing responses to my open letter to black evangelicals just posted this morning on townhall.com. Now, I did get some, shall we call them, interesting responses, like this one, neither you nor I are going to alter prophecy. These things are foretold. We have to pray now that God will get us out of here before masses get destroyed. Or someone else wrote, and these were just emails that were sent to me from the Town Hall website. In fact, I got an unusually large number of emails, which is why I decided to post a follow-up. Here's another interesting perspective. The black youth and Latino vote is being used by the Chinese for the outcome of the 2012 election. Under Comrade Obama, America's military will be emasculated, our nuclear arsenal diminished, our economy utterly ruined, and our population ultimately enslaved if the Obamacare doomsayers are correct. So I got responses like that that you might say are a bit extreme, especially that the Chinese are manipulating the election votes somehow. Quite a few black Christians wrote to express their appreciation for me putting these issues on the table. Others had completely polar thoughts about Democrats and Republicans, so I printed both extremes. Some blasted me for even writing the article. Some were really upset that I offered, at best, tepid support for Mitt Romney and that I was sympathetic to Christians who would not vote for him because of his Mormon faith. One reader said this was an awful, terrible admission of moral and political turpitude. Another wrote, you are aware that there is a difference between what happens and what the vast majority of us like to call the real world in your fantasy evangelical world, where in your fantasy you are some kind of flock leader or guider or giver, great giver of wisdom. In the real world, because of pinheads like you, we reelected the most pro-abortion president in the history of our country. Are you mad? So I got responses like this. By the way, I was not aware that I was a flock leader. If you read my articles or listen to my show, that I'm somehow exerting this power over you. Another wrote, how dare you claim that you are a leader in a Christian society, misspelled Christian, by the way, while contributing to the demise of the Conservative Party. You are a liar and a deceiver. Shame on you. So, yeah, I mean, we're going to get those responses. Another guy said, blah, 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 black Americans voted for Obama because he's black. You call it racial solidarity. If white Americans voted for Mitt Romney because he's white, then that'd be racism. I'm guessing that since you have a radio show and are a contributor to townhall.com, that you're one of the smart guys. So, of course, you're going to get these sarcastic, negative emails and others saying, you know, your column was very good, brilliant, spot on, right on time. But here's what I appreciated. I want to read three responses to you that I very much appreciated. Michael wrote to me and thanked me for, quote, having the guts to hold accountable the black Latino evangelical community regarding their vote for the pro-abortion candidate in the election. Please do not abandon this issue, he wrote. No one else has the courage like you. On the other side, please hold the white evangelicals accountable for their utter failure in addressing social justice. And he's speaking in particular about education of poor minorities. He said they have abdicated their responsibility to the poor, focusing only on their own tribe and giving a godless government control over an issue that the church should be responsible for. So Michael's saying, thanks for having the courage to raise this and holding all sides accountable. Anastasia thanked me for, quote, being courageous and being a facilitator in this most important issue and topic. As an African-American woman, I know firsthand that it's almost impossible to even have this discussion with an African-American Christian who voted for President Obama not once, but even twice. Please continue this conversation. It is so important and vital to the body of Christ as well as our nation. And then Dan, a white Christian, wrote this, quote, there are often times we conclude someone to be an idiot based on what we perceive the intent of their actions is, only to find out later that they had good reason to act as they did. I'm very curious about what blind spots we as white evangelicals have regarding the GOP. Clearly, the strong allegiance to the Democratic Party by black evangelicals has some threads of logic that we are missing. I've been trying to find a black evangelical friend here locally that I could meet with over the next year so as to find out and discuss these blind spots on both sides, but especially those that I am missing. That is the attitude that we're looking for. Let's sit down and talk together. Let's get out of our comfort zone. Let's get out of the circles where everybody agrees with us. Let's get out of that mindset where we're never being challenged. And instead, let's talk issues through and hear each other out and challenge each other's positions in love and in grace. Otherwise, we're just never going to move forward. And 2 years from now, 4 years from now, we're going to have the next election cycles, and 4 years after that, and the same divisions and the same misunderstandings, rather than being the world-changing third party that we are called to be, challenging the major political parties to stand up for what is right and to do what is right, and not just giving ourselves over to either party and not putting so much trust in the political system. 866-34-TRUTH. Oh, okay. Just a little more news for you. In case you have not realized, there is, in general, a war on gender these days. It's not just a matter of gay activists fighting for what they feel are their rights. It is an all-out attack on gender distinctions, on male-female distinctions. I warned about it plainly in A Queer Thing Happened to America. The last chapter of the book pointed in the direction that things are now going. I have quotes in there blatantly attacking the idea of gender, the idea of male-female distinctions, and it gets more and more extreme by the day. So one of the countries leading the way in attacking gender is Sweden. And you're talking about introducing a neutral pronoun. So rather than saying he or she, you just have a neutral pronoun. It would be as if it could be spoken for a male or for a female. They're encouraging people to name girls with boys' names and boys with girls' names. There are now schools that are genderless. They don't make gender distinctions, and they want kids to cross play. You know, boys use girl toys and vice versa, and break down gender distinctions. And schools even being commissioned to do that very thing. Well, the Toys R Us franchise in Sweden, Top Toy, now has a genderless toy catalog for Christmas.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, friends, when I warn about something, I would rather be wrong. I would rather say, look, there's this terribly negative trend coming in society, in the schools, in the churches, and warn about it. I would rather be wrong and everything turns out wonderfully rather than being proven right. Unfortunately, when it comes to the attack on gender, when it comes to some of the larger areas of gay activism, which is to basically downplay, demean, mock the idea of gender distinctions, so marriage becomes genderless and parenting becomes genderless, and you are what you think you are on the inside, and biological sex, gender is somehow not determinative, as some have said, who cares about the plumbing? When I tell you the implications of this and what it's going to mean in schools and education and other areas, I would rather be wrong. Sadly, I'm not, which is why we need radical changes to come in the church and through that to then come to society. 866-34-TRUTH. So in Sweden, as reported on Fox News and elsewhere, Sweden's top toy chain has released a gender-neutral Christmas catalog after it was criticized for stereotyping. I'm not making this up. The catalog from Top Toy, the franchise holder of Toys R Us in Sweden, shows a boy playing with a baby doll instead of a girl, and a girl holding a toy machine gun. Jan Nyberg, the director of sales at Top Toy, said, "For several years, we have found that the gender debate has grown so strong in the Swedish market that we have had to adjust." The company made the switch after Sweden's advertising watchdog scolded it for publishing a 2008 catalog that featured boys in superhero costumes and girls playing princesses. With the new gender thinking, there is nothing that is right or wrong. It's not a boy or a girl thing. It's a toy for children, Nyberg said. If that does not cause a holy moral outrage in your spirit and a deep grief, boy, I don't know what will. 866-34-TRUTH. I have not taken a single call this entire hour, but I'm about to. Jeff in Boston, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Dr. Michael Brown, thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
You know, I've got a unique perspective, I think, from your listenership. I'm a former liberal do-gooder type who found Jesus about 4 years ago.
Uh-huh.
And so I always had a healthy suspicion of, you know, Republicans and conservatives. But when I was born again, of course, you know, when the Lord reveals truth to you, and he shines the light in your own heart, you start to discard the things that you've held on to. And so I started seeking fellowship on internet forums and such, and to try and connect with other Christians. And what I found immediately was just an inherent hypocrisy with white evangelicals that really, it was just, to me, it was like, it was really obvious. We're basically putting conservative before Christian. And so the moniker conservative Christian, that in itself speaks volumes. You know, Jesus comes before everything in our life, even if it means we discard things because it's, you know, doesn't line up with his word and doesn't reflect him. But by the same token, you know, I've also been working in the helping professions for years, a long time. And so I've worked with a lot of people of color. And, you know, over the years, I've had a lot of bosses who are black or Hispanic and a lot of coworkers. And as a Christian, now that I'm a Christian, even when I first started seeking out fellowship in churches, I was down south and I called up a church. And it didn't matter to me. I was in an area where there were churches on every street corner, you know. And it didn't matter to me where I went. I just wanted to find people who love Jesus. And so I called a church, and the gentleman had basically discerned over the phone that I was a white guy, and he was a black gentleman, and he said, I just want to let you know we're a black church. So, you know, let me recommend a church across town. It'd be better for you. And I was just floored. I'm like, Lord, is this what this is about? I mean, you know, white or black, what does it have to do with Jesus? You know what I mean? It's the world. It's culture. And for me, I think Jesus is our culture. We have to put him before everything. And if that means we discard the worldly traditions and things that we cling to, then do it. You know, that pearl is worth it.
Yeah, I appreciate you weighing in from both of those perspectives. And it is interesting when you're caught up in the middle of something, whatever our background, our culture, our political affiliation, our mindset is, we often just think that's normal and try to take that for granted or take it for granted, whereas we need to kind of be jarred out of our comfort zone and sit down with someone who loves the Lord and has a totally different perspective. It's like, what? Huh? I'm not talking about someone who throws out scripture, but someone with a very different perspective. So I appreciate, as you said, the background that you have in coming into this. The good news is there is a deeper unity that we do have in Jesus, and it often gets lost in the disagreements and the conflicts we have over these political social issues. If we could unite much more in our unity in Jesus, and then, Jeff, put the issues on the table. Let's talk honestly. Tell me where you think I'm missing it. And then expose each other's blind spots. We could move forward, and we've got to, Jeff. I agree with you. We've got to. Thank you, sir, for the call. A few years ago in India, one of the trips you were on, there had been terrible persecution that broke out, and one Hindu mob had killed an Australian missionary and his two boys. They had been doing humanitarian work at a leper colony, were sleeping in the car overnight. They were surrounded by this Hindu mob that set their car on fire and burned them alive. And there was outrage in the country over it. The widow and her daughter said, we're going to stay in the country, and actually forgave the killers, told them to turn themselves in, do what was right, but forgave them. But persecution had broken out. Brothers and sisters knew if they went back to preach in one particular state, they could be risking our lives. And I remember washing their feet and everyone weeping together, and they made it clear, my life for the gospel, my blood for souls. Friends, those are the folks that we work with in India. God willing, next week, I leave for my 20th trip to India to work with these very people. And I need your help and support in going. If you can stand with us with a gift of $50 that will not only help with my India trip, but the next month, trip to China, working with persecuted pastors there. If you could do that, it would be tremendous. Your gift of $50, we'll send you as our thank you gift four of my best debate videos on four completely different subjects. You can be blessed by them, or use them as gifts for your own loved ones. It's a retail value of $75. We'll send them to you postage paid for your gift of $50 to help send me to India and China. For your gift of $100, in addition to those debates, we'll send you my Jeremiah commentary and two DVDs of lectures I did on Jeremiah, not available to the public. But you need to call today to stand with us, 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go online, ask drbrown.org. Just click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, no need to make excuses. No need to blame others. Let us say, Lord, I am your servant. willing and able to go where you want me to go and do what you want me to do. Send me. I say it's time we stop talking about it and time to do it. Oh, I mean a revolution, a Jesus revolution.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Oh, you know who's coming under attack again? This Thanksgiving. Are you ready? There's an article in HuffingtonPost.com. The sound of hate? Question mark. Do you know who it is that's being attacked? The Salvation Army. 866-348-7884. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us here on the Line of Fire. As folks are back to work after break for Thanksgiving, I hope you got some rest time, some family time, some good time with the Lord. If you missed my show on Friday, which you may well have missed, given the fact that it was a vacation day for many, or maybe a Black Friday shopping day for some, it's about grumbling and complaining and Thanksgiving. Make sure you listen to it when you can. It might just be the very thing that'll change your life and help you immensely. And that's at our website, AskDrBrown.org. Just click on the Line of Fire for the show. All right, I will tell you more about the attack on the Salvation Army shortly. I will get into that. But I want to say this first. My son-in-law, Ryan, works with a major Jewish ministry. And wherever he travels, he runs into a lot of people who know me from different aspects of ministry. So he always jokes with me that he's always known as Dr. Brown's son-in-law. Oh, you're Dr. Brown's son-in-law? Oh, we love him. We read his books, or whatever the thing is, you know. So I always tell him, hey, man, the day's going to come when I'm going to be known as your father-in-law. Well, that day came last week. We went out Friday of last week. And the Charlotte Motor Speedway, the big NASCAR racetrack, they light it up with Christmas lights at this time of the year. They have this special display, and you got to wait online with your car. They charge you $20 per car. It's a lot to just drive through. But then you get to drive a few seconds on the track itself and go up the embankment and things. So that's cool that you get to do that. But then you go inside, and there's this petting zoo where kids can pet sheep and other animals. And they actually had a manger display. And each night, a different church group would be responsible for manning it. You'd have the wise men, you'd have the shepherds, then you'd have Mary, Miriam, and just a little doll for the baby Jesus. Didn't have an actual baby there. And then Joseph. And Ryan played Joseph. There he was in the turban and kind of, you know, the toga. Didn't give him a beard, though. And I was telling people as I was leaving, I'm sure to his embarrassment, that's my son-in-law. My son-in-law is Joseph. That's my son-in-law. The funny thing is, though, well, I shouldn't say the funny thing. I should say the profound thing is that he told me that there were people that visited the scene. One woman, apparently with her daughter, with alcohol on her breath, and just broke down crying and telling her daughter, this is what it's all about. This is what it's all about. Something about the gospel, something about God coming into our world to save us, impacting people, even at Charlotte Motor Speedway in the midst of a Christmas light show. The display of the manger seemed to touch lives. Okay, when we come back, I'll talk to you about Salvation Army. I want to share some interesting things about some atheist statements recently. Take your phone calls as well and talk to you plainly about what we need to do to really see a Jesus revolution, starting with the church. Change has to start with us. When it starts with us, it can touch the world. We'll be back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, let's not just talk about it. Let's do it. Let's not make excuses. Let's not blame the government. Let's not blame society. Let's do it. Let's live up to God's calling and perspective and say, Lord, here I am. If you want to start a revolution, start it with me. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. 866-348-7884. Okay, Salvation Army. HuffingtonPost.com. Salvation Army's Red Kettle Holiday Campaign takes heat from gay rights activists. With the holiday shopping season in full swing, the Salvation Army's Red Kettle Campaign is once again coming under intense scrutiny from lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender rights advocates. America Blog is asking LGBT shoppers and allies to give downloadable vouchers to Salvation Army bell ringers in lieu of cash in an effort to let the organization know that bigotry is not a Christmas value, according to blogger John Aravosis. I'll keep reading. Quote, the Salvation Army discriminates against gay people, and discriminating donors should find another charity this Christmas than evangelical bigots who advocate against our civil rights, and not just that, they've actively lobbied against pro-gay policies in a number of countries as well. Of course, the article continues, this isn't the first time Salvation Army's conservative view of homosexuality has been brought to attention. Bill Browning on the Bellerico Project noted last year that the Salvation Army has a history of active discrimination against gays and lesbians. While you might think you're helping the hungry and homeless by dropping a few dollars in the bright red buckets, not everyone can share in the donations. The organization also has a record of actively lobbying governments worldwide for anti-gay policies, including an attempt to make consensual gay sex illegal. So, basically, you're not allowed to be Christian. If you are going to do humanitarian work and give millions of dollars to the poor, regardless of whether they're gay, lesbian, straight, poor, black, or white, poor, Latino, or Asian, poor, whoever they are, Native American, poor, whatever nationality, ethnicity, background, color, religion, if you're going to give to the poor, you can't have Christian convictions. You can't stand up for marriage in your society and say it's the union of a man or woman. Friends, I've been telling you for years, and many of you are nodding because you see it and you know it as well. This is not just a matter of tolerance. This is a matter of intolerance. This is a matter of telling Christians you can't be Christian. You can't hold to your views. Used to be, oh, no, you can hold your views. That's fine. That's perfectly fine. If you want to hold to that, just allow us to have our rights. It's pretty quickly gone from that to you're a bigot. You can't hold that view. We're going to boycott you because you're a bigot. I was on a liberal radio show a couple weeks ago. Tom Hartman, major national radio host. I've been on with him twice before, so I knew what to expect. And he had asked me to come on specifically to talk about statements made by Tony Perkins of the Family Research Council to say that with same-sex so-called marriage being legalized in certain states by vote, by the way, the pro-genderless marriage side outspent our side about 5-1, by the way, for whatever it's worth, and was very actively involved in many fronts to try to bring about change, and still the votes were very narrow, even in blue states. But putting that aside, Tony Perkins said that civil disobedience might be necessary. What does that mean? It means that if you're, say, a clerk and you're responsible for giving a marriage certificate and two men said, like, a marriage certificate, you might say, I'm sorry, I can't do that in good conscience. Here's my colleague. They'll do it for you. You may lose your job over it. Maybe so, but you have to act according to your conviction. That's what he was talking about. Well, I was asked to come on to discuss that subject. It very quickly turned to the subject of same-sex so-called marriage in general. And Tom Hartman said something very interesting. Tom Hartman said, for now, it's okay that the churches are allowed to have these views. For now, it's okay. Clearly implying, if not explicitly saying the day will come when we won't even want you to or allow you to hold these views. They will be unacceptable. Friends, those who came out of the closet, sincerely fighting for what they believe was equality and freedom, have been trying to put us in the closet. And all too sadly, many of us have complied rather than saying, I'm not going to be intimidated. I'm not going to be bowled over. I'm not going to be moved by public opinion polls. I'm not going to be moved by rhetoric. I'm going to do what's right. I'm going to look you in the face with love, with respect, with humility, but I'm not going to bow down to an ungodly agenda. I'm not going to bow down to the spirit of the age and the spirit of the world. I'm going to bow down to God alone. A dear friend of mine often used to say, the man who is intimate with God will never be intimidated by man. If you want to quote that, that was Leonard Ravenhill. The man who is intimate with God will never be intimidated by man or by men. 866-34-TRUTH. A couple of comments regarding atheism. Someone posted this on my Ask Dr. Brown Facebook page. Look at the relationship between the level, this is a quote, atheistic quote, look at the relationship between the level of secular government and society with the level of civility and tolerance. I've said this before, but it is such an important point. Countries with large populations of atheists and a secular-based society like Norway, Iceland, Sweden, Denmark, and the Netherlands all have more tolerance for people of all faiths, sexual orientations, and national origin, have less gender discrimination, less poverty, less violent crime, less unemployment, lower teen birth rates, lower infant mortality rates, higher life expectancy, less income disparity, better health care, better education, better public transportation, more political parties, better environmental policy, except perhaps regarding whaling, less pollution, a mostly neutral stance in international affairs, are more progressive in the sciences, have less terrorism, less beheading, less burning of people alive, less stoning to death, less publicly shooting a woman to death while crying, God is great, than any place in history that has been ruled entirely by the religious caste. So I was asked how I'd respond to that. I said, first, it's Christianity and history that led to the emancipation of women, scientific progress, freeing of slaves, and much more. It continues to have a positive effect as it spreads to different cultures. Second, it is the Christian history of countries like those listed above, Norway, Iceland, Sweden, Denmark, Netherlands, etc., that have contributed to some of the positive attitudes listed. But to the extent that these countries continue to lose their Christian heritage, they will become increasingly intolerant and ungodly. And already countries like the Netherlands are guilty of atrocities like doctrine-initiated euthanasia of young and old alike by the thousands. I mean, doctors in recent years came out and said, oh, yeah, we regularly do it without parental permission with children, without family permission or patient permission with elderly. Here's an old person. They're sick. They're not going to recover. They're in pain. They just euthanize them. Here's a baby. It's clear this baby's only going to survive to live to be a year or two based on what medical science tells us, and we require hundreds of thousands of dollars of operations. Just euthanize them. Just kill them. That's what happens in a country like Netherlands with a Christian heritage that moves away from it. While in some Scandinavian countries, as many as 60% of children are born out of wedlock. Oh, this is going to be in the best interest of families and kids. This is going to be an improvement on moms and dads devoted to each other and devoted to raising their kids. And then third, it's atheism that helped drive the atrocities committed in communist countries, resulting in the deaths of 100 million people. I mean, before we go around extolling the wonders of atheism, let's just look on a practical basis and see how these things played out in society. 866-348-7884. Friends, we don't have to apologize for our worldview. It's one thing to be some foaming, radical, closed-minded fundamentalist who thinks that using your brain is of the devil. But to be candid, I've not worked with people like that in 41 years in the Lord. I've not spent time with, hung out with, associated with people like that. I imagine they're out there, but they've not been colleagues or friends of mine. We don't have to apologize for our overt belief in God. We don't have to apologize for our confidence that God alone is to be worshipped and praised. We don't have to apologize for the fact that our morality starts with Him. In fact, the less apologizing we do and the more proclaiming that we do, the better. Got a whole lot to talk to you about today. I want to share a concept with you a little later in the show about liberated zones. Stay with me.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to the Line of Fire broadcast, 866-348-7884. I have a colleague we've not met face-to-face, but I wrote an endorsement for his book on homosexual activism, a book he had worked on over a 20-year period, and he wrote a lengthy and glowing review of my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, before I was sent his book to look at that. And he normally writes 2-3 articles a day on his Culture Watch website. His name is Bill Muhlenberg, an American living in Australia. And he's got a very fascinating article. If you want to go to his website, it's BillMuhlenberg.com. That's MUHLENBERG. One word, BillMuhlenberg.com. Or you can also just type in Culture Watch is one word. It should get you there. He's got a very interesting article about a new book by philosopher Thomas Nagel of New York University. His new book, published by Oxford University this year, is called Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False. Listen to what this atheist philosopher says. Now, you'll ask me in a moment, well, then how come he's not a believer? Well, Muhlenberg gives us the reason why out of Nagel's own mouth. Listen to what he says. This is an atheist philosopher in a book published by Oxford University Press. I believe there are independent empirical reasons to be skeptical about the truth of reductionism in biology. In other words, that everything just has a biological, naturalistic explanation. He says physical-chemical reductionism in biology is the orthodox view, and any resistance to it is regarded as not only scientifically but politically incorrect. In other words, if you say there must be another answer for the origin of life or the development of the human species or anything like that, then you're not only scientifically incorrect, but politically incorrect. Nagel, though, says, but for a long time I have found the materialist account of how we and our fellow organisms came to exist hard to believe, including the standard version of how the evolutionary process works. The more details we learn about the chemical basis of life and the intricacy of the genetic code, the more unbelievable the standard historical account becomes. It is, on its very surface, highly implausible that life as we know it is the result of a sequence of physical accidents together with the mechanism of natural selection. We are expected to abandon this naive response not in favor of a fully worked out physical-chemical explanation, but in favor of an alternative that is really a schema for explanation supported by some examples. Listen to what he says. My skepticism is not based on religious belief or on a belief in any definite alternative. It is just a belief that the available scientific evidence, in spite of the consensus of scientific opinion, does not in this matter rationally require us to subordinate the incredulity of common sense. In other words, just because you have some scientists or the scientific consensus overwhelmingly saying, yeah, we have a naturalistic explanation for the origin of life and the origin of the universe, the origin of human development, and we don't need a God or a designer, just because you have that consensus doesn't mean it's right. He says, that is especially true with regard to the origin of life. I realize that such doubts will strike many people as outrageous, but that is because almost everyone in our secular culture has been browbeaten into regarding the reductive research program as sacrosanct on the ground that anything else would not be science. Oh, how can you believe such idiocy that there is a God? How could you believe such idiocy that there is a design? How could you believe such idiocy that there's actually a plan and a purpose? He's saying it's not idiocy, but we're intimidated into silence. He says, I have argued patiently against the prevailing form of naturalism, a reductive materialism that purports to capture life and mind through its neo-Darwinian extension. He says, I find this view antecedently unbelievable. So that the order that this follows this, it's unbelievable that this could be believed. A historic triumph of ideological theory over common sense. And this great line, I would be willing to bet that the present right-thinking consensus, meaning among scientists, will come to seem laughable in a generation or two. And that's my own feeling as a non-scientist, that given enough time, the views that eliminate design and a clear creator from the process will be mocked as scientifically implausible. So why is it then that he doesn't just say, okay, there must be a God who starts it all? Well, he said back in 1977 that he has a fear of religion itself. He said, it isn't just that I don't believe in God and naturally hope that I'm right in my belief. It's that I hope there is no God. I don't want there to be a God. This is what philosopher Thomas Nagel of New York University says, and yet he's admitting and stating that the materialist neo-Darwinian conception of nature is almost certainly false. Fascinating, is it not? 866-34-TRUTH. You know, communism seek to wipe out religion more than once, and the more it's tried to wipe out religion, the more it's failed. Look at what's happened in communist China, where perhaps one-tenth of the population, over 100 million people, are followers of Jesus. Friends, I want to ask you to help send me to China in January, where I'm scheduled to teach for one intensive week, Chinese pastors gathering in Hong Kong. These are people who have gone against the grain of their own society. I don't know what persecution some of them have suffered, but I'll be teaching the book of Jeremiah. These are trips that in many ways we have to help underwrite. And then next month, December, so December and then January, December, my 20th trip to India. And I'm asking you to help send me to India and to China. These are trips, again, that we finance either in whole or in part. And then when we're away, there are things we're unable to do that we'd normally do stateside to help pay our bills and meet the needs of this gospel work God's called us to do. So what we always want to do is be a blessing to you as you're a blessing to us. If you can help with a gift of $50 to help send me to India and China, we'll send you four of my classic debates on DVD, four of the best I've ever had. A classic debate with Rabbi Shmuley from a few years back that'll be riveting for you to watch and listen to. My debate with Bart Ehrman on the problem of suffering, a famous agnostic. My debate where James White and I team up to debate opponents of the deity of Jesus. And then my debate with gay activist Harry Knox, who claims to be a born-again Christian. These will be eye-opening, life-changing, $75 retail value. But our gift to you, postage paid, for your gift of $50 to help send me to India and China. If you want to help even more generously and you're able, your gift of $100 will also add in my Jeremiah commentary, 550 pages, plus two lectures on Jeremiah on DVD, not available to the public. Call right now, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. Hold my hands up as I go to India and China in these coming months.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Thanksgiving holidays are over. I hope you got some rest and some good family time. I did. We had a house full, 30 people on Thanksgiving. Don't know how Nancy and our daughters were able to pull it off, make it work, but it was a great day together. And the end of the night, we stayed up to about 2:30 in the morning, and then I just had some stuff in my heart, wrote an article you can read on charismanews.com. Click on opinion. It's called Not Enough Dead Jews. Oh, yeah, some real shocking and insightful comments about Israel's attack on terrorists in Gaza after terrorist attack Israel. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I have for an hour and a half put a question out and then talked about a whole bunch of other issues, which is, well, why not? Why not just start a revolution? Why not just act on the things that are so important to us? Why blame the government? Why blame church leaders? Why blame the system? Why blame our circumstances? Why not just say, with God, all things are possible? And by God's grace, rather than talking about it or making plans for the next year and the next year and the next year, never getting to it, I'm going to be a force for good and for change right now. You don't even have to wait for the year 2013. Got a question for you, though. Got a question. Are you ready? I've asked this previously. I want to put it on the table again. Do you think that deep down, some of us are ashamed of our faith? Do you think that one of our problems could be that we're ashamed of the gospel? That we're ashamed to say we believe in the Bible as God's word? That we're ashamed to say that Jesus is our Lord and he's the only way? That we're ashamed to say that God is righteous and holy and he brings judgment and he acts in justice? That we're ashamed to say that God's ways are best? And what do you think? Honestly, do you think that we have been so influenced by the secular media, that we have been so influenced by the prevailing culture, which increasingly is anti-God, that we have actually capitulated here, and that we constantly find ourselves on the defensive? I don't mean the defense of the faith, apologetics, in the positive sense of the word, where we give clear and strong reasons for what we believe, but quite the contrary, where we are on the defense, where we are having to apologize for what we believe or trying to justify it rather than proclaiming it. I heard the story of an evangelist who flew over to Thailand to preach decades ago, early in his ministry career. And he preached about the blood of Jesus and explained why Jesus died and was kind of laughed off the stage. They just mocked his message and said, "You have a bloody religion," the Buddhists who came to hear him. And he went back to his room and he was agonizing in prayer, and, "God, I didn't fly halfway around the world to have your name mocked and the gospel mocked." And the Spirit of God spoke to him, "Don't explain, proclaim." In other words, the power is in the proclamation. You were trying to make your faith sound reasonable. That's what the Lord was telling you. You were trying to make your belief sound acceptable to unbelievers rather than proclaim the message. And he got up that next night and proclaimed the gospel and barely used his own words, quoted scripture after scripture after scripture after scripture, after which they had a massive altar call of Buddhists crying out to the Lord to save them and crying out to Jesus. Could it be that we're trying to make ourselves sound reasonable rather than proclaiming the truth in an unashamed way? Are we ashamed?
Give us strength to always do what's right. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I want to share a concept with you from my revolution book about liberated zones. And for those just tuning in, when we talk about revolution, we're talking about something very radical, but not the way the world does it. Not hatred, not violence, not intimidation, not force, but the Jesus principles. Overcoming evil with good, overcoming hatred with love, overcoming error with truth, overcoming the power of the flesh in the world by the power of the Spirit, the power of the gospel. And I want to talk to you about the role of liberated zones in the midst of Jesus' revolution. Before I do that, though, just this question to put out for you. Again, 866-348-7884. I'm 57. I have seen a fairly dramatic shift in cultural attitudes towards the gospel, in a hardening of heart against the view of God, a mocking of the believing Christian position. I have seen the increasing secularizing of society and even the views that if you hold to biblical principles, you're an idiot or you're an uneducated fool or you're a bigot. Certainly there has always been a conflict with the spirit of the world and the spirit of God. We understand that. Certainly there, Jesus said in John 15, if the world hates you, remember it hated me first. But it seems clear to me that there is an increasing hostility towards the concept of one true God, ruler and creator. Jesus, the one and only Savior, God's word being fully true, that the climate of the society has gotten more hostile, more secular. Are you witnessing that in your sphere? Are you witnessing that in the world in which you live? Maybe you're 18. Maybe you're 88. Are you seeing these same tendencies? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay. In my book, I put that question out, and I'll come back to it. The last chapter of my book, Revolution, the Call to Holy War, which, by the way, very soon will be available for the first time as an ebook. The last chapter is called The Great Commission Battle Plan, God's Strategy for Successful Revolution. And I begin it with some quotes. J. Hudson Taylor, founder of the China Inland Mission, said, "We have given too much attention to methods and to machinery and to resources, and too little to the source of power, the filling with the Holy Ghost." William Booth, founder of the Salvation Army, "While you strive to deliver the outcasts and the poor from their temporal distress and endeavor to rescue them for the causes that have led to their unfortunate condition, you must seek above all to turn their miseries to good account by making them help the salvation of their souls and their deliverance from the wrath to come. It will be a very small reward for all your toils if after bringing them into condition of well-being here, they perish hereafter. To change the nature of the individual, to get at the heart to save his soul is the only real lasting method of doing him any good." In other words, social action is important. Helping the poor, getting involved with the needs of the community is important, but ultimately there must be the transformation of the inner being. A leading socialist said this in the 1920s, "We socialists would have nothing to do if you Christians had continued the revolution begun by Jesus." Wow. So I lay out in the last chapter of this book five basic strategies for Jesus' revolution. And the first thing that we say is, obviously, you have to have a strategy. You have to have a plan of some kind. And the second thing, well, here, first, we must keep our goals clearly in view. Roger Lloyd, writing on Principles of Revolution, said, "You cannot have a revolution until you have some enemies to destroy." Not talking about people. We're talking about ideologies, systems, things that are wrong that we need to stand against, things that are right that we need to stand for. What are our goals? Where are we going? The second principle that I get into is we must establish bases or liberated zones. this friends has been very, very important to me. I kind of grasped it intuitively, and then it made more and more sense to me as I began to read more. So let me share this from our Revolution book. We must establish bases. This was part of the highly successful and murderous strategy of the Muslim leader Hassan al-Sabah, as Amir Tahiri explains. In other words, I looked at what revolutionaries did, those that fought for civil rights in America, good causes like that, those that fought in the American Revolution, those that fought in communist revolutions, French revolutions, in other words, destructive, wrong ones, just to see how did they think, how they operate, and what principles did they base themselves. And here was a Muslim leader, Hassan al-Sabah, almost 1,000 years ago. And Amir Tahiri explains, almost a modern revolutionary, Hassan understood the four phases of a successful politico-religious movement: study, propagate, organize, and attack. He also knew that a genuine revolutionary movement needs at least one liberated zone from which to launch its bid for the conquest of the world. And he's speaking in terms of radical Islam, but listen to the principle, because often the world is mimicking what it sees God do. Often the secular world takes a principle that's a godly principle and then uses it for perverse purposes. So there must be liberated zones, meaning what? Spiritual beachheads, or model operations from which we equip the troops, sharpen our strategy, and launch our attack. Again, we're talking spiritually. We're not talking physical weaponry. We are not the U.S. Army. Okay, we are a spiritual army. The weapons we fight with are spiritual. And if you hear anything from me, then hear that the way that we overcome opposition is with love and with truth and with self-sacrifice and compassion, as opposed to with anger and hatred and violence. What do I mean by liberated zone? Let's use a military analogy for a moment, all right? Let's say that you go in and take you're in war, okay? We're talking just physical war now, using this as an analogy. And you are constantly getting beaten back. There's some hospital that's been taken over by enemy troops, and they're using that. They've got their communication system set up there. They've got their munitions set up there. They're centrally located so that they can guard other areas from there. You've got to liberate that, and you've got to make that your own. And now you've got a base for operations. You've got a place where you can set up your communications. You've got a place where you can care for your sick troops. You've got a place from which you can launch new attacks. We're talking in the natural. What does it look like spiritually? What does it look like to establish bases? We're not looking to the government to bring about moral and social change. Let it play its role, but we're looking to the church, to the people of God. We're not looking to the government to advance the Great Commission. Let the government stand for religious freedoms and rights, but it's up to the church to advance the Great Commission. We're not looking for the government to educate people in gospel truths. We want the government to help us again have our freedom of speech and freedom of religion and conscience, but we must do the work. So if there's not a strong home front, it will be difficult to succeed in the thick of enemy territory. We need prayer bases, training bases, worship bases, sending bases. So on the smallest level, this can happen in a home filled with the life and power of God. Our own homes, if we are believers, our own homes should be bases, should be liberated zones, should be Great Commission bases, should be gospel revolution bases, should be world-changing bases. You say to me, oh, come on, Mike, you got to be kidding me. I work 14 hours a day. I get home, hang out with the kids, talk to my wife, and collapse in bed. And wife's saying, oh, yeah, my day's even harder. We got 5 kids, 2 are under the age of 3, 3 others I'm homeschooling, and then I got to cook and clean for everybody. And then you barely have energy to make up the next morning. Now you're talking about being a base for Jesus revolution. Oh, but hear me. As you pray together, as you keep out the pollution of the world from coming into your entertainment systems in your home, as you teach and train your kids in the ways of God, Yeah, changing the world by changing one diaper at a time. That's part of it. As you set God the examples in your marriage, as you give of your income to help ministry and to help the Great Commission and to help the poor, as you determine that your kids are going to be raised in the faith to live with counterculture values, not bowing down to the system of this age, you better believe that's revolutionary. And if you say, okay, this is holy territory and we're going to treat it as such, friends, when you do that, all things are possible. Who knows? You might just spark something on your block. You might just spark something among the youth. You might just spark something that it's spread. You never know, do you?
The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, it's not just words that the announcer says every day, your voice of moral, cultural, spiritual revolution. It's what we live for. We're on the radio because this is just the extension of the burden that God's placed in my heart for many, many years. Awakening in the church, revolution in society by the power of the gospel. Michael Brown, thanks for joining us. The last half hour, I read some quotes by an atheist philosopher named Thomas Nagel. A colleague in Australia, Bill Muhlenberg, put them up on his website. He writes only 2-3 articles a day. And this one is comments, it contains comments, short review of a book by Nagel, again, New York University philosopher and atheist, called Mind and Cosmos, Why the Materialist Neo-Darwinian Conception of Nature is Almost Certainly False, published by Oxford University Press, where this atheist who earlier, years back, said, look, honestly, I don't want there to be a God. It's not just I don't believe, I don't want there to be a God. But he said this, that when you question the materialist view that you don't need a God, you don't need a designer, you don't need a creator, that everything just came about naturally through a series of accidents, the origin of life, the development of the human race, the origin of the universe, so on and so forth. He said that you're not allowed to question this. He said, I question it, not based on religious belief, he said, or on a belief in any definite alternative. He says, I just can't believe it. He said, based on scientific evidence in spite of the consensus of scientific opinion. And he basically says, if you question these things, you're kind of laughed out of court. Friends, that's what I feel in the society as a whole, just the mocking of these views of a God. Oh, yeah, there's really a God, sure. Oh, yeah, sure. The Bible is really true. Oh, yeah, sure. Jesus is the only way. Right, sure. So we end up on the defensive. As, you know, I'm really sorry. I guess I do believe those stupid, idiotic, narrow-minded, fundamentalist things that no educated or smart person would believe. That's almost the attitude we have to overcome. You hold to just basic biblical views in college, and you get mocked for it. One Christian professor at the college from which I got my bachelor's degree, Queens College in New York, said that she was shocked when she was at her first faculty meeting when she began teaching there after getting her PhD. I think it was in education. But she said she was shocked as they were talking about the previous year, how many they picked off. Yeah, how many did you get? What are you talking about? Oh, Christians that we talked out of their faith. Christians that we recruited for atheism. She was absolutely shocked. That's the attitude, the mindset that we're up against. Therefore, we need to think in an aggressive, holy way. So as I say in the Revolution book, we need prayer bases, training bases, worship bases, sending bases. On the smallest level, this can happen in a home filled with the life and power of God. At the next level, it can occur in a truly biblical, radical congregation. Our home congregation, Fire, needs to do this more and more, but by God's grace, we are a base. We are not just a local church. We are a base from which we have sent out hundreds of missionaries around the world, many of whom have been on the field now 10-plus years, serving effectively, preaching the gospel, making disciples, training and equipping, planting churches, feeding the poor, caring for the needy around the world. And by God's grace, they came to our ministry school, which is part of our congregation. We're sent out from there, and our church helps raise funds for them every year. By God's grace, we have folks in our congregation who are active in pro-life and have a Cities for Life movement that can be modeled in city after city across America for the unborn and for the moms and for the families. We have raised up a banner of righteousness in a godly way against gay activism in our city. We've got folks in our congregation who are now involved in fighting against human trafficking, and on and on. This just from one congregation, which is, you know, even if everyone was there with moms, dads, kids, I don't think it'd even be 500 people. We need to look at ourselves as bases for a Jesus revolution. You're part of a house church, you're part of a mega church. We need to have the same mentality. So the next level, if you want a liberated base, is the level of a revived community, which is a much greater challenge. And at the highest, the level of a transformed region. This is rare but possible. Such bases also serve as havens of refuge for the battle-worn and weary. Here is something that a military writer, Bob Newman, wrote concerning bases in guerrilla warfare, but I'm going to substitute believer for guerrilla. The believers must constantly demonstrate to the populace the evil ways of the enemy, and then the civilians must be shown how the believers are capable and worthy of protecting and serving them. To do this, the believers must establish bases that facilitate the conduct of offensive operations. He's talking the military. I'm talking in the spiritual. Christian campuses can be bases. Youth organizations can be bases. Cell groups can be bases. But we must remember that the base exists for training and sending, for equipping and commissioning, for imparting and releasing, for strategizing and thrusting out. The base must never become a resort. Friends, one of my colleagues working in China years ago was at a prayer meeting when some young Christians who had been in prison for a few years were released, maybe in their 20s or 30s, and they were sharing their testimony, and people were weeping in the room, and my friend asked the translator, a friend of a friend, why are they weeping? And he said, because they're saying, why didn't I have the privilege of being in prison for Jesus? What a mentality. What a different mindset. Friends, I have the privilege for the first time going to China, ministering in Hong Kong to pastors who will be gathering together for special teaching and training. I've been asked to go there and teach the book of Jeremiah. What an opportunity. My colleagues who've done, other professors, have said it's just life-changing for them to go and be with these precious pastors and leaders. That's January. Before that, just next week, God willing, making my 20th trip to India, working with church planters that have planted about 1,500 churches now in tribal regions, often at risk to their own lives, and then presiding at the annual graduation where we lay hands on and send out the next generation of church planters. We have to underwrite lots of expenses with these trips. And I've got some of my ministry team coming with me that they have a heart for missions. We want to expose them as well. Would you help send me to India next week and China the week after? And we'll be broadcasting, God willing, live from there. Your gift of $50 will help me get there, and we'll send you, as our thank you, four of my classic debates for yourself or as gifts for friends, for holiday. One of my best debates ever with Rabbi Shmuley from a few years back, my debate with gay activist Harry Knox, my debate on the problem of suffering with agnostic New Testament professor Bart Ehrman, my debate where James White and I team up to debate against those who deny the deity of Jesus. It's about $75 retail value in debates. We'll send them out to you as our thank you for standing with me to help me go to India and China. For your gift of $100, we'll also include my Jeremiah commentary along with two DVD lectures not available to the public on Jeremiah. For your gift of $100, we'll include that as well. So stand with us, 1-800-278-9978. Help us cover these expenses in these coming months. 1-800-278-9978, or go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, let your home, let your church be a base for Jesus' revolution. Export it from where you live.